Good afternoon, everybody. I think some of you may have been wondering, when's this guy going to say something? Well, here it is. Continuing our investigation of the Mountains and Waters Sutra by Master Dogen Keegan. Traditionally, the sutra was said to be the discourses of the Buddha himself. However, the Buddha was not attached to who was the author. If the words were true Dharma, they were sutras. The sutra, the thread, it connects all time and all space. And thus we have the whole Mahayana collection, which appeared some 200 years after the Buddha's passing. And we have such sutras as the Platform Sutra of Huineng, the sixth Chinese ancestor. And today, the Mountains and Waters Sutra by Dogen. The Buddha said, "We are what we think. All that we are arises with our thoughts. With our thoughts, we make the world." How do we make the world? How do we see the universe? How do we see all beings, all that breathes and does not breathe? Sometimes we get so caught up in our own stuff, even our own practice. We assume that how we see things is how everybody sees them, or at least how everybody ought to see them. We tend not to respect the experience and perceptions of others. Other species have very different perceptions, and therefore very different worlds. As humans, our landscape is largely visual, something of an oculoscape. Dogs and bears, with their acute sense of smell, live much more in an olfactoscape. Whales and dolphins live in a world of sound, an audioscape. And there are countless realms we know nothing about. The realms of the fish, a clam, a tree, the stones and clouds. Dogen wrote, "All beings do not see mountains and waters in the same way. Some beings see water as a jeweled ornament, but they do not regard jeweled ornaments as water. What in the human realm corresponds to their water? We only see their jeweled ornaments as water. Some see water as wondrous blossoms, but they do not use blossoms as water. Hungry ghosts see water as raging fire or pus and blood. Dragons see water as a palace or pavilion." I think by now we know that the water Dogen speaks of is not H2O. This water has no color and is all colors. It has no fixed shape or form. It has no fixed position. It can be a minute droplet or a vast ocean. It can be a placid pool or a giant waterfall. It can be a gentle rain or a raging storm. It is not hard or soft. It flows and is still. It is not alive and it is not dead. Not existent or non-existent. Neither conscious nor unconscious. It flows through all time and space. It is all time and space. As such, it flows forward, backward, up, down, and sideways. And Dogen continues. Now, when dragons and fish see this water as a palace, it is just like human beings seeing a palace. They do not think it flows. If an outsider tells them, what you see as a palace is running water, the dragons and fish will be astonished, just as we are when we hear the words, mountains flow. Nevertheless, there may be some dragons and fish who understand that the columns and pillars of palaces and pavilions are flowing water. Now, human beings will know as water what is in the ocean and what is in the river. But they do not know what dragons and fish see as water and use as water. Do not foolishly suppose that what we see as water is used as water by all other beings. Each of us has perception, many perceptions. Each of us has our mystery. It is what we're entitled to. It is our birthright to contemplate and explore this mystery as clearly as we can, to see it clearly as it evolves and changes throughout our life. This mystery is explored only through contemplation, what we call Zazen. It cannot be seen through the egocentric strivings of a separated self. The mystery consists of our lives as we live them. It is for each one of us to live our own life, our own mystery. The mystery of our work, of washing dishes, driving a car, caring for children. We cannot live another's life, another's mystery, any more than a dragon can live the mystery of the tiger. We can only respect the mystery of others' lives and practice, nor can we impose our own mystery on someone else. The Buddha warns us of the great trap here. If you say of any of the teachings that this is true and all else is wrong, you are far from the way. It is not the Dharma. Years ago at a session that I monitored with Ron Green, back in those days, the Tanto and Jisha were called first and second monitors. One evening during Yaza, I saw one of the participants had brought a chair into the Zendo and was sitting, lounging back with his legs crossed. I was about to give him a stern note, telling him to sit up and get both feet on the floor. Ron told me not to. I asked why not. He said, anybody's Zazen is better than my idea of Zazen. In a remarkable book called The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, the author, Oliver Sacks, describes a pair of autistic twins who had an extraordinary ability with numbers. They could perform calculations in their heads that would normally require a computer. You could show them a calendar and ask them what day of the week was October 12, 1640. They could very quickly come up with the day. They could intuit prime numbers up to six figures and recognize them far beyond that. Sachs writes, a box of matches on the table fell and it discharged its contents on the floor. 111, they both cried simultaneously. And then in a murmur, John said, 37. Michael repeated this. John said it a third time and stopped. I counted the matches. It took me some time. There were 111. And note that 3 times 37 is 111. How could you count the matches so quickly, I asked. We didn't count, they said. We saw the 111. That they could see 111-ness in a flash was extraordinary. But they had gone on to factor the number 111 without having any method, without even knowing in the ordinary way what factors meant. Is it possible, I said to myself, that they can somehow see the properties, not in a conceptual abstract way, but as qualities, felt, sensuous in some immediate, concrete way? Well, doesn't that sound like we're working to do in our practice? To see our world in a serious, immediate, concrete way. Sachs continues, they do not approach numbers lightly as most calculators do. They are not interested in, have no capacity for, cannot comprehend calculations. They are rather serene contemplators of number and approach numbers with a sense of reverence and awe. Numbers are for them holy, fraught with significance. The twins that Sachs described had their own mystery, their own palace. Water for them consisted of a vast landscape of numbers, a numeroscape, through which they wandered at ease and even serenity in a samadhi of innocent delight. It seems that God, or whoever, did not see fit to give them the ability to operate in the world as most of us know it. He gave them a very different world in its own way, equally wonderful, equally mysterious. Sadly, the twins were separated and forced into what we call the real world. Their Eden was taken from them because someone had decided that their idea of life was better than the paradise of numbers in which the twins had lived. But where does it all come from? How is it that dragons see water as a palace? We see water as this zendo in the mountains. How is it that a pair of autistic twins saw water as a paradise of numbers? Many years ago, okay, many decades ago, I took a psychology course. One section was on the psychology of seeing. The instructor showed a slide on the screen at the front of the room. It was a completely meaningless bunch of black dots on a white background. The next slide showed a photograph of Fidel Castro. He then switched back to the first slide, and suddenly we could all see the black dots were in fact the same portrait. But without seeing the actual photograph, I would never have recognized that dot pattern. There was obviously no change in the pattern of dots, only in my cognition. The point being that you see what you are conditioned to see. Until I was conditioned by the photograph, I saw nothing recognizable. For most of my professional life, I taught human biology. In the anatomy class, one of the first assignments was to identify and locate important bony landmarks on the human skeleton. These are the various lumps and bumps where muscles and ligaments attach. Some of these are very subtle and hard to see, and many students simply could not see them. Then these same landmarks were pointed out on a plastic model of the skeleton, on which they had been greatly exaggerated. Then the students could find them easily on the actual human skeleton. They had been conditioned to see them. In the same way, the water we all perceive as our entire reality is what we have been conditioned to see over many, many lifetimes. Absent that conditioning, what is there? Is it our practice to destroy all conditioning and all conditioned things? Can we unsee that which we see? No. It is to see it all clearly for what it is. Utterly empty, without form or change, without any self-existence, with no characteristics whatsoever. Ultimately, we see, even in this moment, exactly as all others see, as the Buddha sees. It is in our conditioning that we are unique in all we see, hear, touch, smell, taste, feel, and even think. Absent that condition, we would be in the same position I was in looking at that pattern of black dots, unable to recognize or unable to cognize anything, and therefore unable to relate or to function. How blessed is that conditioning? Adam, before the fall, lived and worked in the Garden of Eden as a contemplative. Thomas Merton writes, "Although Adam was first of all a contemplative, Genesis seems to place all stress on his active life in paradise. In paradise, there was no opposition between action and contemplation. It is interesting to consider Adam at work in the Garden of Eden and find out that even his activity had an essentially contemplative character." What do you think Samu is all about? Adam's whole attitude about work was disinterested. He did not work in order to live, but he worked because his soul desired it. Adam's work was an important aspect of his existential communion with the reality of nature and of the supernatural by which he was surrounded. Adam had no self, that which was in any way separate from his work, his environment, or his God. He lived as the dragon who has reached the water, as a tiger reclining on the mountain. This existential communion with our reality, each of us in our own way must cultivate this union, this mystery. It is in this mystery that the natural becomes supernatural, and the supernatural becomes natural. We come to our practice and to this session not to destroy or ignore. We are here to cultivate the mystery in our sitting, our walking, our working, our chanting. We contemplate. We live our lives as contemplatives, whether here in this Zendo in the hills or in our lives in the wider world. Yes, water flows. Mountains flow. The palaces, houses, cars, children are flowing water. But still, they are palaces, houses, cars, and children. And each dragon, each tiger, each of us sees the water as our palace, our houses, mountains, cars, children, parents, friends, yards, lawnmowers, stairs, doors, windows, or possibly the million billion universes as numerous as the sands of the Ganges. Each of us has our mystery that is utterly unfathomable by others, and even by ourselves. Each of us is alone, throughout heaven and earth, the only one. Is it ever possible to know another? How much damage has been done in the delusion that I know another person? It is not possible to know another. But it is possible, not only possible, but necessary, to see another. Knowing is all about past and future. I know so-and-so from past actions, therefore I can know what he or she will do in the future. The problem, of course, is that past and future don't exist. So what you're really saying is that my thoughts about the past tell me my thoughts about the future. Good luck with that. Seeing is in the present moment. To see truly is to be truly in the present moment, unencumbered by concerns about past and future. What is it to truly see? Not just with the eyes. To really see, you must see with your ears, your nose, your tongue, and touch, your whole body and mind. Seeing is the opposite of knowing. So, all you dragons and tigers on this last day of Sesshin, continue your practice. See clearly. Pay close attention to your own unique mystery, not falling into speculation and judgment. Trust your own true nature, which is not separate from all natures. Open all your senses to everything, all sights, sounds, feelings, aware but not caught. The light pours through you. The wind passes through you as if you were not there. Whatever your practice, whether it be mu, the breath, the koan, just sitting practice, contemplate in all your sitting, walking, working, resting. Not for any reason, not for serenity or enlightenment, but because your soul desires it. Don't try to solve anything. Let it all be. Let the mystery be the mystery. Contemplate your own mystery, for it is the mystery of all beings, of all being. Know nothing. Understand nothing. See everything. This is true seeing. Together with all beings, we see the great way.